destination. It's the Exodus. So if you think about it, after 70 years of exile, they are on the verge of being released from the exile, being released from this slavery to the Babylonians and now the Medes and the Persians. It isn't by accident that he receives this Passover imagery, if you will. No meat, no wine. It isn't by accident that God times this in conjunction with the Passover. And he says, I looked up and I saw a man clothed in linen with a belt of gold from Uphaz around his waist. His body was like beryl, chrysolite, if you will. His face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze. And the sound of his words was like the roar of a multitude, is one the way that my version puts it, the New Revised Standard. Everyone else, it's the sound of many rushing waters. Immediately, it'll remind us of another passage. It should remind us of another passage. I want to put this, the imagery at least, on hold for a minute, okay? How he's dressed, what he looks like, especially how he's dressed. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But this passage that reminds us, I want you to take your mind off how he's dressed, and I want you to understand what happens between these two beings in these two passages and the conversation that Daniel and Joshua have with this being. Because it reminds us of this. It should remind us of this. It came about when Joshua was by Jericho. He lifted up his eyes. He looked, and behold, a man was standing opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. Joshua went to him and said to him, are you for us, or are you one of our what? Remember that they're on the verge of going into a land full of enemies and to have it given back to him. So for Joshua to look up and see somebody with a sword in his hand, of course, as a good general, he's going to ask, are you with us or against us? And he said, neither. But as a commander of the army of the Lord, I've now come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshiped. And he said to him, what do you command your servant, my Lord? The commander of the army of the Lord said to Joshua, remove the sandals from your feet, for the place where you stand is holy. And Joshua did so. Does anybody remember when this occurred? And I do that as a preacher, but yeah, I remember when it occurred because I've been studying. So I asked the question like, I know and you don't. No, nobody remembers when it occurred. Oh, and I wouldn't have remembered when it occurred if I hadn't had to study for this, all right? But when it occurred was right after Passover. On the day after Passover, that very day, they ate the produce of the land, unleavened cakes, and parched grain. Okay, that very day. The day that it happens is the day that Passover ends, the day that the vision happens. So it connects the Passover imagery, if you will, from Daniel 10 and this encounter with this apparent heavenly being, if you will. Joshua calls him a commander of the army of the Lord, or a prince of the Lord of the host, is the way that you see all of these. The commander of the army of the Lord said to Joshua, and it all happens on Passover. So the one thing that brings them together is Passover. The other thing that brings them together is their reaction. The words are almost exact. Daniel said he looked up and he sees a man. He looked up. Either it means that he was very tall, or in Daniel's case, I believe, since he's on the bank, he looks up and the man is actually on the water, is the way that he puts it. And with Joshua, it says that he looks up. He's already on the ground. We're not sure why he looks up, but there's something that draws his eyes up, and they both do. And then also, their reaction is the same. As soon as he pronounces who he is in both, Joshua fell on his face to the earth and bowed down. And Daniel, when he sees this heavenly being, this one that's dressed in linen and with the gold sash around, it says, I fell into a deep sleep with my what? With my face to the ground. They react the same. The other thing that connects them is the man himself. The man that they see himself. This takes a little bit of a journey, if you will. And I'll try to get through it as best I can. But it says that in Joshua 5:15, he calls him again the captain of the Lord's host, or the commander of the army of the Lord. Okay? It's Zar Zara Adonai. Zar is this kind of Hebrew word that talks about chief or first or number one. He is the commander of the host of the Lord. There's something about him. Now in Daniel 10, that exact phrase, it's when you're looking at Hebrew and Greek, it's something that you would call a technical phrase. In other words, when these words are put together like this, it only applies to one thing. It's a technical term. And it applies then to somehow this divinity, if you will, while also being recognized as a man, somehow it applies to this, the host or the commander of the army of the Lord. Now, the word like that doesn't appear in Daniel 10, but you got to dig just a little bit because we saw it and we may not have realized it back in chapter 8. Back in chapter 8, when the little horn was being described as going all the way to heaven, remember, disrupting the sanctuary in heaven, disrupting even the prince of the host. There's the term right there. The commander of the Lord's host. Host, army, war. That's the word, Tsar, if you will. Chief, prince, if you will. It's all up there. Again, it doesn't expressly occur in 10. But in verse 1, it says that he saw a great what? A great conflict, a great war. There's the host right there. So the word is mentioned, the host, and then he sees this being. He may not have given him the title yet, but Joshua sure did. Because it said, that's what it said back then, okay? In verse one, right there. The word was true, and it concerned a great what? Conflict, war, army, host. So implying that this being has something to do with this great conflict, has something to do with whatever this war is. And it sets the tone of this chapter. So the tone of this chapter is Passover. The tone of this chapter is how this being is dressed. We'll get to that. And the tone of this chapter is this guy, this prince, this commander of the Lord's army, this chief prince among princes. As a matter of fact, in that verse back in Daniel 8, you can nearly literally translate it as prince of princes, if you will. So we know this chapter is about this war and somewhere around it, and this prince, and this Tsar, if you will. So we move on. And he said to me, Daniel, greatly beloved, pay attention to the words that I'm going to speak to you. Stand on your feet, for I've now been sent to you. So while he was speaking this word to me, I stood up, what? Trembling. Remember, when he fell down as if he was dead. He fell into a deep sleep. That's what this has done to him. Something about the appearance of this being, this prince, if you will, this Tsar, if you will, this chief prince, if you will. Something has made him weak. So he stands up. He may be standing, but he's still what? He's still trembling. And he said to me, do not fear, Daniel. From the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before your God, your words have been heard, and I have come because of your words. I'm here because you asked. And he says, the prince of the kingdom of Persia opposed me 21 days. 21 days. The last what? The last 3 weeks. Daniel's been mourning and fasting for 3 weeks, looking for an answer. And at the end of the 3 weeks, he's here. There's something about the opposition of the prince of the kingdom of Persia. What's real interesting, though, really interesting, is that the very prince of the kingdom of Persia has been holding up the progress going on in Jerusalem. So I'm not saying that this being is actually fighting, but this being is saying, you know, that what's going on in heaven and what's going on in earth concerns us very much. What's happening here, if you will? It opposed me 21 days. So Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I left him there with the prince of the kingdom of Persia. So somebody shows up, and he's left there. Go ahead and contend. He puts this guy in charge, whoever this guy is, and leaves him in charge with the conflict on earth. And what's his name? Michael. We're going to get to how that all fits in, okay? But I want you to notice again how he was dressed. Remember looking back on how he was dressed? He was wearing white linen and he had a gold what? A gold sash around his waist. In the midst of the Day of Atonement, the high priest is to come in the morning, and the first thing he does is he changes his clothes. He doesn't quite change them, but he takes off the outer vestments. You know, that big, heavy robe that has that ephod on and the turban and everything else. He takes it off, and guess what he has on underneath? He has on holy linen white garments underneath, and the sash that holds them up is made of gold. It says that he'll put on the holy linen tunic, have the linen undergarments next to his body, fasten the linen sash, and wear the linen turban for all the holy, and these are the holy vestments. He doesn't need the others. He'll bathe his body in water and then put them on. See, he's got a lot of work to do. The high priest, when he shows up in the morning, he has to sacrifice the daily sacrifice. So that's two rams, if you will, or one ram, I'm sorry, a ram. He has to sacrifice that. Then he has to sacrifice an entire bull for him and his family. And then he has to sacrifice the goat. He's got a lot of work to do. What I love is that the high priest has sweats to do that in. He puts his sweats on. He puts his workout clothes on. Well, that's how this guy's dressed. This being that Daniel sees is dressed just like who? Just like the high priest. But not the high priest on any day. The high priest only on the day of what? Only on the Day of Atonement. Again, and what did we learn in chapter 8? Chapter 8 was all about Day of Atonement imagery. Those people that find out who they are in sometime in the fall of 1844, we begin to believe that he enters into some sort of Day of Atonement kind of ministry. Where? In the earthly sanctuary? No, in the heavenly sanctuary. So this high priest shows up dressed as if he's in the midst of what? Of the Day of Atonement. This one looks different though. His whole body seems aflame. He compares his body to beryl or chrysolite, if you will, topaz, if you will. His face shines like lightning. His arms and legs are like polished bronze. He has eyes of fire and a voice like the roar of a multitude. So where else do you find this? Real quick, you find it in Ezekiel. And the beautiful thing about finding it in Ezekiel is Ezekiel, as with Daniel, are what you would consider in time or real time prophets. See, Isaiah and Hosea were pre-exilic prophets. They were prophets that warned about them to come. Ezekiel and Daniel are prophets that happen within the exile. What I think is beautiful is, again, God said, you're going to feel abandoned. You're going to go to that place. That place is going to try to beat the worship of me out of you and try to torture the worship of me out of you. But what was proof that he was still there was Daniel's ministry and Ezekiel's ministry. And when Ezekiel shows up, it's very dramatic. He says he sees a great cloud with fire flashing forth continually in its midst. Something like what? Something like glowing metal. Those same words about this guy's feet, it's burnished. And they gleam like burnished bronze. It looked like burning coals of fire, his eyes. And lightning was flashing from the fire. This is the throne. This is God's throne. The living beings that are in front of the throne, they go to and fro like bolts of lightning. The appearance of the wheels of the throne, their workmanship was like sparkling what? Beryl, same word. And I heard the sound of their wings, and it was the sound of many what? Waters. It's the exact image, except in Ezekiel, it's not the high priest, but it's the actual throne of God. Ezekiel and Daniel, if you put those two together, it's telling the exiles, look, you've been here for 70 years and you've anticipated this and it looks like all has fallen apart and it could very well be, The Prince of Persia is still being contend with. History is still trying to make the proposition or the transition from Medes and Persia to the Greeks. In other words, earth history is still going on, and you may not know what it's going to be like. In fact, you may never know. Daniel isn't going to know. He's not going to even see the end of the prophecy. But he said, here, right now, in the midst of your exile, you've got me. You have the power and the personage of God within this high priest. And you have all of the presence of God existing in his throne. Because that throne just doesn't stay in one place. It just doesn't sit in one place. It's got wheels and it moves throughout the exile. God's presence is present even in the exile of their sin. So it's all there. And Ezekiel interpreted it this way. He says, like the bow in a cloud on a rainy day. So he immediately takes the imagery back to where? Back to the flood. The last time that God made this statement. See the bow in the cloud and you hear my what? My promise. The appearance of the splendor of all around. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And when I saw it, I fell on my face and I heard the voice of someone speaking. So here it is, all of them together, the Exodus language. God had come down after hearing the cries of his people here in their exile, the culmination of their sin. He is still with his people, telling them to look up and hold on. Whatever happens, Daniel saw back in chapter 2, he saw the progression of all of earth's history ending in this horrible whatever it was that he didn't know, that he couldn't figure out, that beast that he could never identify, that little horn that he can't himself identify. No matter what happens amidst all of this, God says, I'm still with you. And whatever happens in heaven or happens on earth, I'm very concerned with up in heaven. Because the overall message, again, of the God of Israel was, I have heard the sound and the cries of my people, and I have come down. So we hear the word to us from Revelation and our letters to the exiles. Because guess what? Our scripture reading, it's this guy. He's dressed the same. And when he begins to speak in chapter 12, I think in Daniel 12, when he begins to speak according to Revelation 10, he speaks the same words, but we'll get there. But it says, in the midst of the lampstands, I saw one like the Son of Man, clothed with a long what? A long robe, linen again in Greek, with a golden sash across his chest. His head and his hair were as white wool, white as snow. His eyes were like a flame of fire. His feet were like burnished bronze, refined as in a what? Refined as in a furnace. And his voice was like that of the sound of many waters. And this being identifies himself as divine in our scripture reading. When I saw him, John, I fell at his feet as though what? As though dead. And he placed his right hand on me. And he says, don't be afraid. I'm the first and the last. Daniel falls dead. And the being says, don't be afraid. Daniel, stand up. It's the same word of encouragement to those who are in exile. Those of us who are there. So Daniel, Ezekiel, Joshua, John, they all react in the same way. This is a divine being. This is not just an angel. See, Gabriel has shown up before with Daniel. Did Daniel ever try to worship him? No, he never fell on his face before. He somehow identifies Gabriel as somebody not to worship, as somebody created by God. But this guy, they all fall on their face. Daniel identifies him from last week as being the Messiah that we talked about from chapter 9. Because remember, that's what we concluded. Chapter 70 is the universal ruling Son of Man, our empathetic judge, the one who sets up the thrones, the one who judges all humanity at this particular time. And says, you know what? I've judged everything that you guys can do. I've judged everything of this alternate way of life that the enemy convinced you can live. And you know what? It has been found wanting. But he judges us as one of us, not as somebody condemning us from some sort of high moral plane. Jesus is the Word incarnate. He became one of us. He's our judge, but he completely empathizes with us. Chapter 8, he's the heavenly high priest. Talking about the Day of Atonement occurring, talking about the little horn may disrupt it for a little while, 1,270 years. That sounds like a long time, but he said, guess what? It won't last forever, and it'll all be restored. That's what I think is so amazing about this, is that the last time we heard of this guy and the last time we heard of that service, if you will, in the heavenly sanctuary, it was being disrupted and thrown down by the little horn, except now the high priest shows up. And he shows up and he has all his power. And he shows up and he comforts Daniel. In chapter 9, he's that sacrificial lamb. He's the one that put himself on that cross in the middle of that 70th week, remember? And he put an end to sin and he made an everlasting atonement. And he gave a covenant to many, many, many other people. So now we add this to him. He is that universal ruling Son of Man. He is the heavenly high priest. He is our perfect sacrifice. And he's also now this chief fighting, contending prince. This is now him. And by the way, we were given his name, and his name was what? His name was Michael. His name was Michael. So this message given by Daniel through Gabriel, it's a message of victory. See, Daniel's already mourning defeat of his people. God gives him a vision of the Messiah. Remember, he was mourning the defeat of his people. God gives him the vision of the Messiah. And now he gives him one of the second coming, because this is the second coming of this priest. Here he comes, if you will. Twice Daniel has sensed in his body the transition of life to death. In verses 9 to 11, it said, how can such a servant, my Lord, talk with me, such as me as my Lord? As for me, there remains now just no strength in me, nor has been any breath left in me. Twice he receives comfort. The battle against Persia is following its course in history. Yeah, things are happening on earth. Are we ever outside of maybe saying that God causes or forces or moves things around, like some sort of, Zeus on steroids? No. It says that whatever happens, it happens according to prophecy. It happens according to his will. The progression of Earth's history is being made. The progression of Earth's future is being made. And it's all in the hands of this divinity. It's almost like he's saying, yes, it's going on, but you know what? You don't have to worry about that. Because no matter what happens, I'm here. No matter what happens, I got this. So that's what he says. Do you understand why I came to you? Shall I return now to fight against the prince of Persia? I'm going forth, and behold, the prince of Greece is about to come. See, history is doing what? History is doing what history does. It is rolling along. Stuff's happening. Stuff's happening right now, right? We're in the time of the feet and the clay, and it's just moving on, right? It's just going. We take comfort in the fact that it is going on within the hands of God. He's got it. But even more important, no matter where we are, no matter what time we are living in, he is present. See, this great war that talked about in 1 is not this war with the Prince of Persia. The great war is the great controversy. That's what this great conflict is. It isn't about an earthly battle. The earthly battle is going to happen, and it's going to happen according to prophecy. Heaven's dictating this, but the great conflict is shown as climaxing with Gabriel emitting this great battle cry. I asked you what his name was, and yeah, that's what it is. It's a battle cry, if you will. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia was withstanding me for 21 days when, behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left there with the king of Persia. He does it there, the battle cry is there, and then he's going to do it again, okay? He'll do it again in 21. I'll tell you what is inscribed in the writing of a truth. There is no one who stands firmly with me against these forces except Michael, your prince. Michael, that's the battle cry. You may not realize it, but in the language that Daniel is using, that is the battle cry, and it is the only battle cry we need. Look, the call to worship in Exodus was after everything was done, after everything came over with, all right? The call to worship was God saying, I'll pursue, I'll overtake, I'll divide the spoil, my desire shall have its fill of them. I'll draw my sword, my hand shall destroy them. You blew with your wind, the sea covered them. They sank like lead in the mighty waters. The battle cry belonged to who? Who fought for the slaves to be able to escape Egypt? God fights for them. It's your battle, Lord, he says. And the battle cry was this: who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in splendor, and doing what? And doing wonders. That's what the battle cry sounds like in Hebrew. Who is like the Lord actually is Mi Kamacha Balam Adonai. Mi K-L. Remember, Emmanuel is not a name. Emmanuel is a complete sentence. Okay? Emmanuel is not God with us. It is God is with us. Michael is a sentence too. And the sentence is, who is like you, O God? The very name Michael senses that there is no one like God except who? Except Michael. It's in the language. Every time somebody who speaks Hebrew hears, every time Daniel hears Michael, he hears, who is like you, O Lord? This being right here, there's no one else like him. It's you. At this time in history, at this present time, at this time in the future, no matter what, how prophecy is going to fold out, it doesn't matter to us. Why? Because Michael is here. He's here. And it is none other than God himself. Who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Michael, it's a sentence. Gabriel mentions Michael as one fighting on his side as the prince of Daniel and his people. The literal translation shouldn't be princes of princes. The literal translation is prince of princes. And Daniel will add a word when he uses it in chapter 10. He puts ahad at the beginning of it. Ahad means one, alone, or first. Alone among the princes, or the prince of princes. Michael is the chief of princes in Daniel 8. He's the high priest from the heavenly sanctuary. And he puts ahad in front of the chief of princes. He puts ahad in front of the what we don't see in Joshua, we see in Daniel. And that word ahad is one, alone. It's found here. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is what? The Lord is one. Shema Yisrael. Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. The Lord is one. The Lord is only. This heavenly being, this heavenly high priest, is none other than God himself. Who is like God? Nobody. The priest with the eyes of fire is Michael, the son of man in Daniel 7, the prince of princes in Daniel 8. The difference here is that in 7 and 8, he appeared only after the earthly history of these kingdoms. He only appears after. He seems to be born of the waters like these kingdoms. But here, the revelation, it takes a shortcut. Dr. DeCon says, notice that it bypasses the kingdoms. The being appears immediately, but he appears on the water. Daniel is on the bank of the Tigris. He appears on the water. By the way, when he shows up again in Revelation 10, he'll have one foot in the water and he'll have one foot on the beach. He is completely, absolutely over the power of both of the beasts that rise up from the waters and rise up from the land. This is the last stage of the coming of man, of the Son of Man. This is it. See, Michael's familiar to Daniel. He concludes, or he supersedes the power of the beasts in 7:8. He supersedes all earthly power when he shows up this time. But he's also the one who stood before Joshua on the plain of Jericho. He's also the one that carried Israel across the Jordan and fought for them and led them into the promised land. Thanks to Jesus, you and I get to experience every bit of the Exodus, but we experience it in a completely fulfilled spiritual tone, spiritual fulfillment. We don't have any enemies to displace. We'll just be taken and placed at the table of Abraham. The angel informs Daniel of a great political war between kingdoms, but also of this cosmic war between good and evil. The vision is to bring us hope, it's to bring us victory. See, he's in the midst of this great conflict, but he's also the conclusion of it. No matter what happens in this vision, the battle transitions in this earthly history. For us, it's history. For Daniel, it's all future. But then eventually, there's a future for us too. We have to go on from today, right? We have to live continually for today. He's saying that just as Daniel had to live when all history was future, we get to live when all history is still future to us. And as sure as Daniel saw this vision and had him with him, we have it even more. His presence with us. Because he promised not only to be present with us, he promised to be present in us. See, but for here, I can't get over how he's dressed. Again, it's not just that he's dressed as the high priest. He's dressed as the high priest in this one particular aspect of his ministry, this one time. See, like I said, he removed the high vestments, the linen, the sash, the one with all the rocks in it. You can't wear something that weighs about 15 pounds around your chest and expect to be able to sacrifice an entire bull, right? So he removed all of that before he even started, and he makes those sacrifices, the daily sacrifice. And remember, the daily sacrifice was the one that was being interrupted by the little horn. That daily sacrifice, that daily constant availability of Christ's forgiveness and atonement for you. It was always to be burning perpetually on there. Something about the little horn and all everything subsequent to it said that, no, it isn't available. But there's something special about this high priest showing up at this time. See, for Daniel, all of that is still future. For us, it concluded in 1798. Yet there's this other incarnation now, this two-horned beast that now brings it back up for us. And just as sure as that it was future for Daniel, history for us, now our future, whatever this beast has in mind of how he'll try to disrupt anything, we can be assured that our high priest is still on the job and that he's got this. See, the thing was that while he was wearing those sweats, he made all of those sacrifices, and for the one time that he was supposed to, he actually takes that sacrifice from that goat and he goes all the way into the most holy place. He goes all the way in to the throne room of God, and then he cleanses the sanctuary with the blood, backs completely out of it. And he sprinkles the blood on every article of worship, if you will, within the sanctuary. And he ends up in the outside on the altar, and he sanctifies the altar one more time with it. And he's standing there. He's standing there now, probably covered in blood, pretty sweaty. These are sweats you would not want to come home from the gym and throw in your hamper, okay? Which, by the way, you're not supposed to, because he's supposed to change now in the outer court, and he burns those. That's how rank they are. See, but the thing was that you remember that all Israel surrounded the sanctuary while all this was taking place. And there was only one way for them to be able to tell whether or not it was all done. See, because when he gets back out there and he changes his clothes and he puts those vestments back on, within the hem of the vestments were all these little pomegranate bells, like an inch apart all the way around. And when he put those on and they heard the sound of the bells, they knew that he had done what he was called to do and that they were at one with God again. And then the high priest comes out of the sanctuary. He comes out. He comes to the people. And he walks then again amongst the people. Yes, and for Israel, the whole thing started over again for a year. But that high priest that day walked out with God, being at one with his people and at one with him. Why? Because that high priest did what he was supposed to do. If you think about it, what I've always said is that in this, he being dressed the way that he is, he's in the midst of that. You know what? He hasn't picked up the garments yet. He's done his sacrifice. It all has been done. He's standing and waiting. Waiting for what? Waiting for the Father to say, you know what, son, it's time. Ring the bells. Sound the trumpet. Go get our kids and bring them home. This is the time in which we're living. See, Daniel's already seen him as judge. He's already seen what we've done. He's already seen the best that humanity can do, the best that humanity can offer. And all we came up with is to make people worship God by force, create empires that will make people worship God. That's the best you came up with? That's been found wanting. I've judged that. And I'm here to give you complete victory. There is no one like God. The one named, there is no one like God. The one named God is with us, showed up, gave us complete victory. And now we live out this earthly history in that assurance and that alone. We're just waiting for the bells to sound. There is no other high priest. There is no one like him. There's nothing else left. Like I said, prophecy and history are going to keep going. But for you and me, there's nothing else left. We make this decision about this high priest for us, and we're done. We can just wait. And just love people with the love that we've been given. And to show them what the spirit of prophecy really is. His presence with us. There is no one like him. Echad Sar Balam. The chief prince of princes. Alone. That's the message of Daniel 10. I'm not looking forward to 11 and 12. But we'll go. We'll keep going. But next week, we'll have communion. We'll celebrate this very transaction. We'll celebrate what happened every day in the sanctuary and one day a year in the Day of Atonement. You get to do all in one ceremony. And that's what we get to do next week. So thank you for a little extra time. Somebody apologize to the Spanish group, okay? And I apologize for making you wait to eat. But I will be with you today. I just have to set up my little chair, if you don't mind me sitting in my chair that allows me to put my feet up. I'll be with you today. My first potluck since October. Happy Sabbath, everybody.